Yeah, it's still Shavuot Tov. Ad Yom Shlishi. Good morning, and I always want to begin by saying that it is an honor to be able to speak at such a group, not only because of the wonderful organization that the YU Kol Torah Mitzion is, and as well, of course, this wonderful, wonderful Institute of Learning, the Neely Institute of Torah Learning, which stresses not only the learning of Torah, but that 52% of the minds of the Jewish people that need to be cultivated and need to be able to find their expression. And Baruch Hashem, in the age in which we live, Torah learning for men and for women is a serious, serious enterprise. David HaMelech is uniquely suited to be the inspirer of the generations. David HaMelech was that individual who seemed to have had it all. Every experience that we can conceive of, that we have, every one of those experiences was experienced by David HaMelech, it seems. He was the greatest musician of his time. He was the greatest soldier and military man of his time. He was the great, not only diplomat, but politician, the melech, the king, the ruler. He was perhaps the greatest writer of Hebrew of all time. And I say perhaps is because we can't really judge, you know, Yeshayahu, David HaMelech. It's very hard for small minds to be able, nor should they, engage in who is, quote, the more proficient and better. But one thing is certain. The David HaMelech's writing, his thinking, his inspiration crosses the ages and directs itself to us. One other element before we get into the body of this particular shiur is the Bible as literature. There are two views that use the term Bible as literature. Both of them, I think, we need to distance ourselves from them. One is the group that I call Harat Sofim, whom I deeply respect, the professors who are on Harat Sofim at Hebrew University and other places. For them, Bible is only literature. And that means to say that we look at the biblical text as a piece of literature with reverence, but we look at many pieces of literature with reverence and a deep respect because it helps us to understand ourselves. There is a second misuse, I believe, of the Bible as literature when people say it cannot be literature, it is not literature. We will not insult the status of the Torah and the Bible as being called literature. I would like to submit a third possibility, and that is that the Bible is literature. It is the most sublime literature. And what Hemingway and Fitzgerald and other great writers, Dostoevsky, whoever they may be, they aspire to that literature. That the Bible itself is the ultimate of literature. Because what is literature? It is the communication to people yet unseen. People in the writer's own generation and in those generations to follow who will be inspired to live lives of meaning. And if that's the case, there is no literature which is more sublime than the Torah. But it is not just literature. It is that which helps us to understand ourselves in the image of God. And that's what separates itself from virtually all other forms of literature that we have. I've selected for today Tehillim Perek Chet, which you all have a copy. Is there anyone who does not yet have a copy? Okay, very good. I believe everyone has. Okay. Yeah. And let us take care of that. I'm sure I'll edit that out. Others more? Yes, I'll give you sure. Now, Let us first take a look at the text itself. Perek Chet is a short perek. In it we have certain general rules that David HaMelech used when he wrote. And remember, of course, Tehillim, our Chazal tell us that Tehillim is not exclusively written by David HaMelech. There were 10 authors, according to the Medrash. Everybody from Adam HaRishon to the sons of Korach, all right? Not to mention David HaMelech himself. But certainly we can say that David HaMelech was the chief managing editor of Tehillim. And even though, according to some, again, very, very responsible sources, many Tehillim, or at least some Tehillim, were written after David HaMelech, but nevertheless, it is altogether correct to attribute Tehillim and associate Tehillim with David HaMelech. And of course, one of the main reasons here is this perek, because we see the introduction, the first pasuk, Lamenatzeach ala gitit mizmor leDavid. Lamenatzeach we oftentimes interpret as to the conductor, because in fact, even though there was no Beit HaMikdash at the time of David HaMelech, certainly there was David HaMelech composed songs that were to be played, in this case, ala gitit. Gitit was some instrument that apparently, according to Ibn Ezra and others, was created in the city of Gat. And so therefore it's called Gitit. There are others who speculate differently, but for our purposes, that's sufficient. But I'd like to focus on two words here, Lamenatzeach. The word Lamenatzeach we say for the conductor, but it is interesting that Rav Hirsch, who wrote a magnificent commentary on Tehillim, I believe it is most often, if not exclusively, presented in two volumes. Rav Hirsch, very early on, says the word Lamenatzeach here should be understood from the term Netzach. Netzach means eternity. And Menatzeach is the PL form, which means to the one who grants an eternity, or to, in Rav Hirsch's term, to the one who grants victory. In other words, he is not dedicating it to be given to the conductor of a musical score or of some orchestra, but rather the one who orchestrates. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one to whom this is dedicated, Lamenatzeach. So now that's Rav Hirsch's view, that when you see Lamenatzeach, it means that. I'm not so sure that he means that it therefore excludes the possibility that we have a double entendre. You have a double meaning here. It could be to the flesh and blood conductor and to the one who orchestrates from above. Ala getit mizmor le David. Sometimes we find, more often than not, we find Mizmor le David. Sometimes we find the term David, le David. And sometimes we find the phrase in the very, very famous Perek of Dalet of le David Mizmor la Hashem ha'aretz umloa. Right? There, so Rav Hirsch also says, the word Mizmor here means a welling up of emotion. The welling up of emotion. And sometimes Rav Hirsch says the emotion precedes the writing, and sometimes the writing itself is an expression of an emerging sense of feeling and intensity. But in either case, the word mizmor here, like the word zmirot, means a song. Clearly, David HaMelech used the medium of music in order to convey his ideas, his emotions. Hashem Adonenu ma'adir shimcha b'chol ha'aretz asher tenahodcha al ha'aretz. That Hashem, he says, as you can see, the English there, very simply for us, Hashem our master, how majestic is your name throughout the earth. And if you note, of course, at the very bottom of this parak, we have a bookend type of writing in which David HaMelech says, Hashem our master, at the very bottom, verse 10, how majestic is your name throughout the earth. David HaMelech here sets the tone. And that is, we are not talking about me here. Very often David HaMelech speaks about himself, because as he goes through the trials and tribulations of life, he conveys to us his feelings, his reliance on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at times his fear, at times his faith. But here, he makes it very clear, it's not about me. It's about my place, our place. When David talks about himself, he talks about every human, about our place within this world. And therefore, in Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Yud, we find that Hashem is our master. That means He is the personal God. Of course, you know, we look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu in two ways. One is God as creator, all right, Bore. And second, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the personal God who is concerned for the behaviors and the fate of each of us. And so he says, Hashem Adonenu, in that sense you are Adonenu. All right, you are a personal God. Ma'adir shimcha b'chol ha'aretz asher tana hodcha ala shamayim. But this God is also the God, not also, but it's of course at the same time, the God who is master of all the universe. Now, of course, in the pagan world, the world in which David HaMelech lived, certainly at that time, and even to some degree now, to the pagan, the relationship of the God-man relationship was that of staying out of the way. Primarily, don't get him angry. Because what did they do? They would offer offerings, or they would do whatever rituals that were necessary in order to, so to speak, calm this God of vengeance down. And so therefore, to stay out of the way and to appease God. From the time of Avraham Avinu, and as is expressed by David HaMelech throughout Tehillim, in particular this one, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not that of getting out of the way or avoiding the awful fate. It is the establishment of a relationship. Ki ata imadi, you are with me. Even though David HaMelech says, Yigam ki elech begeitz al mavet, even though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, lo irara, I will not be afraid. Ki ata imadi. And it's very interesting. If you look, the poet Arye Strauss brings this out in his Perush on this on Perek Kav Gimel. We're talking about Kav Gimel now, but we're talking about Ched. But parenthetically, Kav Gimel. If you look at the first three verses, it's all written in the third person. The first verse is right. David HaMelech says right. Hashem lo echzar binot deshed yarbitzeni al mei menuchot yad. He will lead me. He will take me. He will protect me. And all of a sudden, gam ki elech begeitz al mavet. But when I go through the valley of the shadow of death, lo ira ki ata imadi. Anyone who has gone through the fear of death, God is no longer in the third person. He is now ata imade. And if you look at the rest of that parak, from that point on, Shivtacha Mishantacha, Hey Mayinachmuni, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly addressed as you. Far, far, far from the pagan concept of the relationship between Hashem, our Creator, and us. Okay, and then he says something which is fairly famous: Mipi Olalim V'Yonikim Yisadta Oz. All right, from the mouths of babes, or through the mouths of babes. Meaning to say, even little children, HaKadosh Baruch Hu establishes his strength. And it's just interesting how David HaMelech, here he takes the most vulnerable of all human beings, the ones that we do not associate with God's strength, so to say, and say, within those very beings, at that very time in their life, that's precisely when we see God's strength. So he says, "V'piolim v'yonkim isad ta'oz, you establish strength l'man sorerecha la'ashpit oyev u'mitnakem, in order to silence the enemies of God, those who say that God is not present in the world, that God does not exist, or God is to be understood in the pagan sense. Those very children are the ones who testify to God's strength. Now I'm going to refer you here at this point to number two, which is on the first sheet. Rabbi Avram ibn Ezra makes the following statement on this pasuk, on this word particularly, mipi olalim, from the mouth. He takes it literally as the term mouth. Now, we also, in our modern terminology, whenever we want to say that that in fact something very unexpected truth is relayed through an unusual source, what do we say? From the mouths of babes. Now, that's taken from here, I assume. All right, but it's interesting that Ibn Ezra says that this is. We need to look deeper than that. Omar Rabbi Moshe, kitam mipeolalim im lo yidabru befihem, though they may not even speak, without speaking, in silence, so to speak, or at least not in the formulation of what we would consider words, heim ba'atzmam yodu l'chasadecha, they themselves unwittingly attest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kindness, ki techalkalem v'tafreim v'tarbeim begufam ba'orech uv'rochav. In every sense, you have given them and equipped them with the ability to be able to survive and live. And so therefore, when we see this, a child who cannot fend for himself, nevertheless is given all the tools, both internal, in terms of the organs, and external, in terms of the parents, to survive. But then he says, he often quotes Rabbi Moshe, but he now says, v'anachon be'enai. This does not negate here. When he says v'anachon be'enai, he's not negating the earlier statement, I don't believe, because the two are not mutually exclusive, and you'll see in a moment. Ba'avur heyot adam nichpad mikol nivra'ei mata amarkein. He says, because human beings are in fact the most glorious, the most noble of God's creations, David HaMelech makes the statement. Ki me'et sheyachel hanar ledaber. From the moment that a child begins to formulate words, and I think everybody in this room has probably just marveled at those first words. It doesn't matter a child, a grandchild, somebody else's child, and you hear them put a sentence together that they probably have never heard, right? But because of this remarkable power of speech which they have, they begin to formulate and speak. Ki me'et she'achel hanar ledaber v'zeh tam mipi olalim. That's what it means here in the pasuk, mipi olalim, from the mouths of olalim. Now, olalim he considers to be toddlers. There are various different views as to what an olel is in the Torah, anyway, or in Tanakh. All right, but here mipi olalim olal. From the mouths of babes, here he means to say a toddler. Az tachel matkunto lekabel koach haneshama. Such an important concept. When you hear a child begin to speak, what you are witnessing is the development of the neshama. The development of the neshama. That the human power, and we're going to talk about this in a couple of moments, the human power of speech is what differentiates us from the other creations of the world. Now, it's important, of course, to know that does not mean that animals do not communicate. But we yet have any information. We have no information that would tell us that they contemplate. That they contemplate the future. That they think about that which is good or bad. But rather, they communicate. Communication has always been known. So he says, Tachel matkunto lekabel koach haneshama hachachama, meaning to say not only just the neshama, but that contemplative part of our being which separates us from all other beings. Ad shetiskal b'shikul data, until it can actually comprehend through weighing things, meaning to say through contemplation and analysis. Koach bora. It is at that point that at the time that speech comes, that the child is now ready to begin the lifelong task of recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. Ki techazek hanefesh yom achar yom. Indeed, it's a process. Day by day by day, the neshama grows. I fear that when our neshama ceases to grow, that may be the time that we no longer can justify our existence on this earth. The neshama is not, according to Rabbeinu Ibn Ezra here, the neshama is a dynamic part of us. It is not static. That means to say, it grows when we're a child. We have every reason to believe, according to this, that it grows as we are an adult. V'zetam yisad ta'oz. What is the strength? You inculcated strength within human beings. That is the strength of being able to contemplate that which is beyond us. Now, human beings, by the way, have a remarkable facility, two of them. One, perhaps, that we share with animals, and one that which we do not. At least I think not. One is the idea of zikaron. We are coming upon the 3 weeks, and the 3 weeks demands of us zikaron, that we have memory, that we remember, that each of us, and what is memory? It is the reconstruction of events that have occurred within our lifetime, and we are able to reconstruct them. Each of us has the power of memory. Okay, so that is the first element. The second element, though, is that of chazon, of vision. To be able to construct a world in our mind, not as it is, not as it was, but as it should be. That is the concept of chazon, and that is tied to, when Ibn Ezra says speech, he does not mean merely the verbalization. He means the conceptualization that people need, that each human being has within him or her. Is there anyone still missing one? You want the last one out? Okay. All right. Now, let us take a look, and that's Ibn Ezra. Then David HaMelech continues on Pasuk Dalet. And he says, Ki eresha mecha ma'ase etzba'otecha. When I see your heavens, the work of your fingers, not even your hands. As a matter of fact, the Gemara goes into great length about fingers versus hands, all right? But nevertheless, David HaMelech chose fingers, meaning to say that obviously that very, very specified work that can only be done with fingers, but it also does not require the large motor skills, quote, of the hand. God doesn't need that either. But he's giving us an image. Yareach v'kochavim asher konanta. I'm very sorry that on the last page, can anybody tell what you're looking at on the last page? Starry Night, right, that's right. Van Gogh. We're going to talk a little more about Van Gogh and Starry Night. And by the way, Night fell a little darker than Van Gogh, I think, planned it here. But nevertheless, I thought it would work, and I even put it on light. But when it, you know, yes.
Isn't it's not the only time in the Bible that it's written in Hebrew?
I'll try to look and see. Usually it's Yadecha. It might not, may or may or may not be, and that's true. We can find that by looking at a concordance to see our fingers. What? It's Balokimhi. Yeah, but that's written by. Of course, that's the Khartoumim of Egypt. The magician said it. However, very good observations, both of you. Very good. Let's see if it find. We can look in a concordance and see if it appears other ways. But David selected clearly the word etzbotecha to show the fineness, the fine work that is the world. And when you think about this, by the way, there are 100 billion stars. I did not count them, but there are 100 billion stars in our galaxy. And astronomers believe that there are 100 billion galaxies. The image. Okay, I know. I'm glad you're sitting. I was all right. 100. Right. It's impossible. All right. And the image which is given is picture yourself on a beach, and you take a handful of sand. On a beach, a big beach. What you have in your hand is what we see of the universe. But in terms of the entire beach, it's nothing. And so when David HaMelech, and by the way, the closest star to us is Alpha Centauri, right? I believe, right? And it is 4 1/3 light years away. That means to say the closest star aside from the sun that we view, we only see what it looked like 4 1/3 years ago, because light travels 186,000 miles a second, and for 4.5 years, you see what it looked like 4 1/3 years ago, something like that. Right? That's the closest star. That's the closest. We're not even talking about the distant stars that Hubble can find and other remarkable instruments that we have today. So David HaMelech, it is. Absolutely irrelevant whether David HaMelech knew or contemplated exactly how many stars there are. Irrelevant. What is relevant, though, is that he sees within himself the smallness of human beings. Who are we, after all, in this vast, vast universe that we live on a speck, literally a speck, within a solar system, which is in itself a speck within the galaxy, which is within itself a speck of the universe, an expanding universe, at least according to Einstein. So, who are we? And David HaMelech now answers. And that will be what will take us through the rest of today's discussion. Ma enosh ki tizkerenu. What is man that you should take note of him, you should remember him? Uven adam ki tifkedenu. And what is mortal man that you should even take note of us? We are a speck within a speck within a speck within a speck. Now, by the way, every parak of Tehillim, not just this one, but every parak of Tehillim answers or addresses some eternal question. What is an eternal question? It is a question which is asked by all human beings, irrespective of the generation in which they live or the culture in which they live. All human beings have had to contemplate this. But David HaMelech formulated it. And David HaMelech now gives us the answer. And this is now the centerpiece of Jewish existence. Pasuk Hey. Pasuk Vav. Vatechasrehu me'at me'elokim. You want to know why God remembers us? You want to know why God, quote, takes note of us? Because you, Hashem, have made us just a touch below the divine. V'chavod v'hadar ta'atrehu. And through glory and majesty, you have crowned us. Itur is a crown. And that is what gives us our significance. Not the amount of space we take up, but what we do during this brief span of our lives in which we interact with other humans, with the environment, and with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the essence of what man is. Now we're going to devote the rest of this morning to the other selections that I have for you. First, we'll do the one pasuk. I would have liked to have spent a little more time on it, but notice the very next pasuk in Zion, he says, Tamshilehu, you have made a master, b'maasei yadecha, over the works of your hands, kol shata tachat raglav. You have placed everything beneath us, right? Man, he's talking about man in the third person, but we can say us, right? Now, the word tamshilehu means to govern, not to vanquish. It's important that we understand that we are, and Rav Hirsch will talk about this later on in the sheet, I hope we will be able to get to it, that when Rav Hirsch talks about it, the issue is not that man can vanquish nature, that we dominate nature, but rather that we are, within our framework, we're, shall we say, middle management in Hashem's universe. We are governed by the laws that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, the physical laws, meaning to say our lifespan and how we shall function in the world, and of course the Torah laws which we have as to how we shall behave within the world. And the word Tamshileo was chosen by David very carefully. I'd like you to draw your attention to the fourth note which I have here, which is, to me, the seminal pasuk in all of the Torah which describes the God-man relationship. Bereishit Perek Dalet Pasuk Zayin. Cain is disturbed by the fact that his brother God turns to his brother and in fact favors his korban. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him, he's downcast. And it says, Vayipalu panav, his face fell. Very interesting phrase, face fell. Meaning to say, of course, he was downcast. We use that term, downcast. And you can tell it on people's faces when there is a frown or there is, so to speak, a fallen face. Notice what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Cain. Haloim teitiv se'et. If you do good, Cain, se'et. Doesn't say techupar, you will be forgiven. It might well mean that. Chazal say that it means that. But notice the selection of words, se'et. You'll be able to lift your face. Your face has fallen, it can rise again. V'im lo teitiv, but if you do not, la petach chatat rovetz, that's the bad news. If you don't do good, and there the vav in v'im is but, v'im lo teitiv, But if you do not make yourself better, la petach hatat rovetz, the sin lies in wait for you your whole life, like a bad taco, I guess, or something like that, that stays with you forever. All right, you got to change. But then bad news continues. Ve'elecha teshukato. It wants to get the better of you. Of course, metaphorically. When we don't do tshuva, it builds on itself. You know, a law in motion, right? If a mitzvah goreret mitzvah, avera goreret avera. If we don't do tshuva, then it will lie in wait for us. But here's the good news. Ve'ata, here's our word again, timsholbo. You can master, it should say, you can master it. I left off the word it. You can master it. Doesn't mean vanquish it. The truth is, if we vanquish the Yetzer Hara, then we are no longer humans. Then we are malachim. The perhaps the greatness of being a human, the Gemara tells us, is the struggle. And it's not easy. A struggle, each of us struggles from the moment we get up in the morning until the time we go to bed at night. Is it, shall I say the good word or ignore the good word? Shall I make someone happy or shall I just ignore them? Or worse yet, make them sad? Shall I do this mitzvah or shall I ignore it? Because after all, I'm entitled to a good time. All of that, our relationship between human beings and our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of that is part of that grand struggle that human beings must go through in order to be human. And that's what David says here. Were we actually godlike completely, then there'd be no struggle. We wouldn't be humans. It is that vatachasrehu, that we are just below. On the one hand, you know, half empty, half full. On the one hand, we are not godlike. Sad. We are not God. And therefore, we don't always make the right decisions. But vatachasrehu ma'at me'elokim. On the other hand, the great news, the wonderful news is that in fact, we are just below the divine. And in that sense, we are capable of making consciously good decisions. Okay. Now let's look at source number 5. This remarkable statement by David HaMelech, the Malbim, who lived in the 19th century, and I am certain that he was aware of Darwinian theories concerning the human being. And of course, you know, his theories put the entire world, well, certainly the Western world, on edge. If we are, and of course, Copernicus was before that, right? Copernicus said that we don't live in a geocentric world. We're not the center of the universe. Well, we know that now, certainly physically, right? But we live in a heliocentric world. And by the way, he was wrong about that too, because it's hard to say that our solar system is anywhere near the center of anything. All right, physically. But nevertheless, that set the world on edge. And now comes along Darwin and says, you know what, we're not even, we are an evolving, part of an evolving creation. And the Malbim here and in other places, he was a very well-read man. Because if you read his writings, you can see without mentioning Immanuel Kant, who of course affected philosophy from the 18th century on, he quotes Kant verbatim without mentioning his name. And here he speaks about the nature of human beings, and I'm going to read it with you quickly. L'chein ikdamti le'mor, he says. Therefore, I have given a preface to say shegeber ha'adam ha'amati hu medaber chai. If you want to know the geder is lahagdir. If you want to know the definition of a human being, he is not a chai medaber. He is not a living being that speaks. He is a speaking being. His essence is speech. Remember, we have mentioned that earlier concerning Rabbeinu Ibn Ezra. And he says, he is a speaking being. That's my essence. That's what we are. Now, I'm going to tell you a brief story. When I was in college, my sociology professor walked in. I took one course in sociology, and he walked in the room, and of course it was a room very, very crowded, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Man is a social animal." Now, for a sociologist, that is about as true a statement as you're going to get. That's how he makes a living, seeing human beings as a social animal. Therefore, what? Social is the adjective, animal is the noun. So we are an animal that has social characteristics. The Malbim, never heard my professor, but clearly, the Malbim says, no. Man is not anything animal. Man is a being unique in the universe because he is capable of speech. Again, not just what I'm doing now, but it's speech as representative of being a contemplative being, of being able to have chazon, vision, not just memory, but chazon, vision, to see a world not as it is, but how it should be and as it should be. Rotsoni, so he says, I think I may have made a mistake. Oh, she'ikar. I left out the kuf there, sorry. Ritzo, you are actually victims of my inability to type properly, so we'll have to deal with that. Ritzoni, but thankfully there is you can get your own copy of the Malbim and you can see it as it should be. Ritzoni she'ikar atzmut ha'adam. Now notice he talks about the word atzmut. Atzmut means the essence. Aristotle, when he spoke, talked about two things: incidental and essential. That when we want to categorize things, and of course the Malbim here is talking about categorizing. He gets this, and he doesn't get it from Darwin, but he knows he's talking to people who are now under this influence. So first of all, he talks about what does it mean to be, my definition? My definition is my essence, not what is incidental. What is incidental to all of us is brown eyes, blue eyes, hair color, no hair, yes hair, height. All of those things, those are incidental to the essence. Right? The fact that one may have two legs, or the fact that, or two arms, those are incidental. They are not the essence. And so he says, what is the essence of man? V'amatato hu nafsho ha-sichlit. That is what Ibn Ezra calls the nefesh hachachama. So Malbim calls it the nefesh hasiklit, the contemplative soul. Right? Ratzoni, I mean to say by this, ha'im mitzad atzmuto v'shorsho eino shayach ela hatachtonim klal. Ela tachtonim klal. That the reality is, by the way, it's not ha'im, it's ha'adam. Ha'adam mitzad atzmuto, man, from the standpoint of his essence, he is not like animals. And here's where the Malbim comes in, which is fascinating. He says, take the whale. He says, I don't have it here. He says, take the whale, for example. If you look at a whale, how are you going to categorize it? Do you call it a fish that has the characteristics of a mammal, meaning to say it gives live birth, it nurses its young, because that's what a whale does? Or do we say no? It is a mammal that lives in the sea. All right, that's so you can see the influence of Darwin on the Malbim's thinking when he wants to communicate with us. And so he says, I'm going to read one more line. He says, "Rak el ha'elyonim." We are not to be categorized with the tachtonim, with those with mammals, for example. Of course, you know, biologists, zoologists would classify us within the category of mammals. And of course, that's not a false categorization, but it does not deal with our essence, says the Malbim. Right? We, our essence is with the Elyonim. Ki etzem ha'adam v'ikaro, because the essence of man and his source, hu nafsho v'sichlo, this is the neshama. And this is the intellect, the contemplative intellect, the gufo agashmi, but our physical body, hu rak mikre, it is only incidental. Sadly, you know, when we think of human beings, we think of their body, etc. I'm going to give you a true story. I have a very, very, very dear friend who I only get to see once a year in Eretz Israel, and he seldom comes to America. And I was at a hall, I was at a wedding, and I looked in a mirror. I didn't expect to see my friend there. I looked in the mirror, and it bounced off, and he was over there. And I said, my friend, it's my friend. When I went over there, I realized it wasn't my friend. When I saw my friend, what I thought was my friend in the mirror, I was overcome with joy and a feeling of bonding. When I saw that body that I thought was my friend's body was really somebody else's, No feeling at all. So that's what it means to be tied to the neshama. It's the neshama that I was tied to, not the physical being. He actually, when I got closer, I saw that it looked like my friend. There were small differences. So I couldn't even say he's a pretty good friend. I don't know him at all. All right? Why? Because I know my friend's neshama, but I don't know this other person. All right? And so this is the Malbim. And he says, therefore, he calls us a medaber chai. We are, our essence is speech. Speech is the ability to contemplate, to have chazon, to see the world as it should be, as the way Hashem intended it to be. And that is our essence. And that is our essence. Now, I'd like to continue with number six, the Moral Mitrag. The Moral Mitrag writes as follows. He writes this in Tiferet Yisrael in the third parak. I put it down there. That's right. He's not commentating on our parak, but Tiferet Yisrael helps us to try to understand what is our place in the universe. He says you can see the difference between us and all other beings between those who are the hatachtonim va'elyonim. What he calls earthly beings, tachtonim, are we who inhabit this world, the elyonim, and those who inhabit the upper worlds. Ki elyonim shleimutam befoal einam tzrichim lotzi shleimutam melapoal. He says, if you look, he says, angels, there's nothing to do. They're all created the way they are. That's what they are. They're angels. They're angelic, right? And therefore they are not dynamic by definition. They are static because they're created exactly the way they are to be. And then he says, "Vatachtonim zulat adam," and the lower beings, aside from human, from God, from man, "Ein lahem gam kein yitzia el apoel." They never actually go into a form of potential. That's true. A baby chimpanzee will grow to an adult chimpanzee, but there are no expectations of potential fulfilled or not fulfilled. That's what he's talking about. That we do not see it. Now, I would add to you from this that only man is capable. Do we ever only talk about human beings as being ought? The word ought only applies to us. Only human beings have an ought. Here is where I am. Here is where I ought to be. And so therefore, as we come now, I mean, we're coming to Tisha B'Av, and soon after that, Mirz Hashem, we'll be coming to the Yom Noraim. That's the time when we contemplate. Here is where I am. This is the kind of father I am. This is the kind of husband I am. This is the kind of brother I am. This is the kind of friend I am. This is the kind of a teacher I am. This is the kind of whatever it is that I am. Right? Then I have to ask myself, what kind of friend, parent, spouse ought I to be? Ought does not apply to zebras and it doesn't apply to lions. They are what they are. A lion is a lion, a zebra is a zebra. Good news for the lions, bad news for the zebras, but that's the way it is. Right? There are no bad lions because they eat zebras. Right? But there are bad human beings because they remove the dignity of other human beings, or they, in some form or another, cause pain to other people and to God. All right, let us move on. Because they've given me the grand signal. I have 2 minutes. I'm going to skip Rav Shamshur Frohl Hirsch, not because it's unimportant, but because you can read it yourself. It's pretty self-explanatory. I'd like to close with two things. One is Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik's statement. Man belongs to a cosmic system and is united with his environment. He thus experiences existence as an object. Here Rabbi Yoshe Ber talks about in one of his most famous dialectics that there are two parts to man. There's the man in Perek Aleph of Bereshit and the man in Perek Bet of Bereshit. And he says that, and he defines them as man subject and man object. Man object is man as he fits in the universe. When you say man, he, of course, it means humanity. But he calls him man's object. That I live in a cosmos. I live in a world. So therefore I eat. It's very similar. He addresses it a little differently than the Malbim does. I eat. I sleep. I look for pleasure. I need to satisfy certain needs. And so therefore that is cosmic man. And he says, And he calls that man-object. Man-object exists only as an element of an all-inclusive order and cosmic drama. And to him, reality is manifested by responsiveness to the system. That's man-object. And to exist means to work, produce, interrelate with other elements of the system. Man-object, and this is so beautifully written, man-object does not exercise too much metaphysical, ethical freedom. His actions follow the collective pattern of a society. Boy, we've seen a lot of man-objects in our lives, have we not? The system in which he lives. He is fair, but not kind. Honest, but not compassionate. Just, but not loving. He is unemotional, precise, and ignorant of the world of individual conception. Why? Because I'm a cog in a machine. When it's taken to its... That's a part of us. By the way, we cannot ignore that part of us. That is a part. We need to be able to function that way. We need to have court systems. We need to have systems, even bureaucracies to some degree, yes. But if that's all we are, man, object, I am an object, and therefore I treat you as an object, then we're in serious trouble. On the other hand, man, subject, is elusive and clandestine. He is not uniform because his depths allow him to hide. Vaitchabei ha'adam. Unlike man, object, man, subject is not always fair because he displays extremism. We're given to our own passions. His awareness is spiritual as opposed to sensual. He is inexact and impatient with details, but he is sensitive to the grandeur of the whole. That's why I put Starry Night here. That is a classic example of man, subject. That Van Gogh, with all of his quirks, I think we got to say, he had a few quirks, but the idea is he expresses in this, and all artists, right, express a degree of man-subject. Man, as we see, as he sees others, as he sees himself, not necessarily in an objective, not at all in a subjective sense. All right, he says, but he is sensitive to the grandeur of the whole. He is visionary, chazon, and willful. Meaning to say, he does things according to his will, not mechanically, and his logic is voluntaristic rather than rational. Voluntaristic means I do something because I believe it is good, Oh, I put up one finger, put up two fingers. So, okay, I got it. We'll split the difference. Okay, anyway. All right. Because man is subject to, capable of making voluntary choice to be good. If we had no voluntary choice to be good, we'd be angels. That's what, but we're not that. And the Torah tells us over and over again. And now I just want to conclude actually with just one phrase, which I'm not going to read the whole poem, but it is William Ernest Henley wrote a poem. He's a man, a poet of the 19th century and very early 20th century in England. It's not on the sheet. He wrote a poem which was later called Invictus, which some of you may have seen Invictus, the movie on Nelson Mandela's life, etc. All right, and in the end, Mandela was guided by these words, but in the end, I think we can use this here, that he says, it matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul. And that is precisely what David HaMelech is saying. V'atachasreu ma'at me'elokim. We really don't control fate in the sense of what will physically happen to us. How we respond to it, how we act, how we engage ourselves with the world and with others, we indeed are the captains of our souls. Good morning. Thank you.